It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest
world news
headlines.
Another suicide bombing targets the north-central Nigerian town of Azare, Burkina Faso, on the cusp of a civilian transition authority. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. A female suicide bomber Sunday killed at least 13 people, wounded more than 60 others in the north-central town of Azare in Nigeria's Bauchi State. Although there's been no claim of responsibility, the blast appears to have been the work of the militant Islamic group Boko Haram. Earlier Sunday, the Nigerian army said it pushed Boko Haram militants out of the northeast town of Chibok, home of more than 200 schoolgirls the group kidnapped earlier this year. Burkina Faso's military rulers say the country's new interim civilian leader will be announced no later than today. Politicians and representatives of the army, civil society, religious and traditional leaders signed a transition charter Sunday to guide the country back to elections after longtime President Blaise Compaoré, who abruptly stepped down last month. A new prime minister is expected to be appointed by Wednesday. Mr. Compaoré resigned October 31 amid mounting opposition to his efforts to change the constitution that would allow him to stand for re-election next year. He was replaced by Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Yakuba Zita after the military suspended the constitution, which has now been reinstated. VOA's Ann Look reports.
There will be a 90-member National Transition Council that has legislative powers and is led by a civilian. That council's seats will go to 30 opposition politicians, 25 soldiers, 25 civil society members, and 10 representatives of the ex-ruling party. The interim president will be tasked with leading the country to elections in November of 2015.
The African Union on November 3rd issued an ultimatum for Burkinabe leaders to establish a plan to return civilian rule by Monday or face sanctions. This is VOA News. The United States will begin enhanced Ebola screening today for travelers who begin trips in the West African country of Mali. The other countries involved enhanced entry screenings at U.S. airports include Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Liberia. Meanwhile, Dr. Martin Salia, a Sierra Leonean national who lives in the U.S., was airlifted from Sierra Leone to Omaha, Nebraska for treatment, is now listed as extremely ill. He is at the Nebraska Medical Center's biocontainment unit that has successfully treated two other Ebola patients. In Liberia, the Associated Press reports the health minister has been replaced by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Walter Gwenengale being replaced by George Warner, formerly head of the civil service. The government has been criticized for a heavy-handed and ineffective response to the Ebola epidemic. Mrs. Sirleaf has also set a national goal of no new Ebola cases by Christmas Day, December 25. In Guinea, the fight against Ebola is impacting scores of malaria patients. Karim Kamara reports from Conakry.
Guinea's government committee against malaria says many of the undocumented deaths suspected of being from Ebola may actually be from malaria. This is presenting an even deadlier situation in a country that the World Health Organization ranked amongst the 10 nations with the highest malaria mortality rate. Guinea's national coordinator for the fight against malaria, Dr. Timothy Gilavogi, says Ebola is eroding the recent gains Guinea has made in reducing malaria mortality rate by 50%. The main problem is that both malaria and Ebola show similar signs initially, high fever, nausea, and vomiting. Only blood tests can distinguish between them. Dr. Gilavogi says fear of Ebola is keeping sick people away from care they need. He says even many health care workers choose not to go to health centers for fear of being infected by Ebola or risk being stigmatized as if they had Ebola. He says he and some other health professionals are looking to coordinate awareness campaign and speed training on diagnosing both illnesses. Karim Kamara for VOA News, Conakry.
The bodies of 74 South Africans killed when a church guest house collapsed in Lagos, Nigeria in September were repatriated home Sunday. A cargo plane carrying the bodies landed at a military base in Pretoria as part of a somber reception ceremony broadcast on television. The building collapse at a church compound of T.B. Joshua killed 116. 81 were South Africans, but the laborious identification process continues. Sudan's foreign ministry Sunday again denied access to a U.N. African Union peacekeeping mission seeking entry to a North Darfur village where an alleged mass rape by Sudanese soldiers occurred October 31st. Khartoum has denied local reports of the rape of some 200 girls and women by Sudanese troops. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Somalia's prime minister is giving an ultimatum to resign or be replaced.
There will not be a winner in this quarrel at the parliament, and we are suggesting, we are recommending as his ministers to resign so that the country can move forward.
Abdullahi Goda Barry is Somalia's Minister of the Interior and Federal Affairs. Calm returns to Central African Republic's capital after days of his standoff with former rebels. A young candidate is optimistic about his chances in next month's special senatorial elections in Liberia, and Ebola victims to receive community care centers in Sierra Leone.
We are setting them up in the communities because often people have to wait very long before they are moved out of their households to treatment centers far away. Secondly, community care centers also provide additional beds for treatment as such.
Rula Monarch is the UNICEF representative in Sierra Leone. Zimbabwe doctors try to bring calm to hospitals after a strike. And we'll have a report on the stigma and rehabilitation of Uganda's disabled children. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A majority of Somalia's 22-member federal cabinet has written to Prime Minister Abdi Wale Sheikh Ahmed, giving him an ultimatum to resign, or President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed would appoint another prime minister. The trouble began when President Mohamed instructed his cabinet to ignore a cabinet reshuffle made by Prime Minister Ahmed because the president said he was never consulted. A parliamentary debate for a vote of no confidence in the prime minister was disrupted last week by his supporters when they refused to take orders and insisted on singing the national anthem. Abdullah Goda Barry is Somalia's Minister of the Interior and Federal Affairs. He says the majority of the cabinet does not want this stalemate between the president and the prime minister to further drag down a Somali government that was already struggling to govern.
Well, we are his cabinet members. We try to be realistic. If our prime minister, our leader, if he lost the confidence of the president and also lost the confidence of the parliament when 140 MPs wrote a petition or raised a motion, then we don't see a hope in this government to stand and function. So the best interest for the public is that our prime minister lead us to resign, and that a new government which has the confidence of the parliament and the president be established.
Mr. Minister, the way I understand it was that there was supposed to be a vote in parliament, and twice that vote did not take place. So that means democratically there should be a vote. You are not giving the prime minister a chance. Why not have a vote?
Actually, it's the parliament that wants to vote, but a very small minority of MPs loyal to the prime minister that is stopping the voting to happen. Very small minority of about 20 is making noise and bringing bolsters in the parliament and threatening that people to sign in. That's what the problem is. But the government members, the ministers, would like to see voting to happen so that the parliament will give us the confidence or will give us no confidence, and then other people will have a chance.
Let's assume that the prime minister does not resign. What happens?
What will happen is the president will appoint another prime minister, and that prime minister will go and face the parliament and ask a vote of confidence. And once that prime minister has a vote of confidence, then the prime minister will appoint ministers.
There is supposed to be a conference in Copenhagen today, Monday, on Somalia. Let's assume that this conflict continues. What sort of message is Somalia sending to the international community?
Well, actually, the aim of the conference is to evaluate the new deal contract that we have with the donors. 1 year ago, Somalia sat with the donors in a format that's called a new deal, where the support that the world is giving to Somalis, the Somali themselves will have a say in it. And today it's turning 1 year, and we would like to again meet and face the donors and talk about what has been achieved, what has not been achieved, and what were the problems. So I think this will not have any impact, because the donors as well as the government, they prepared themselves to share and exchange and compare notes and see how we further can help the situation in Somalia together.
Abdullahi Goda Barry is Somalia's Minister of the Interior and Federal Affairs. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mogadishu. U.S. authorities said Sunday that Dr. Martin Salia, a surgeon who contracted Ebola while working in Sierra Leone, is extremely ill. Salia, a Sierra Leone national who lives in the United States, is being treated at a hospital in the central U.S. state of Nebraska. Meanwhile, the U.N. Children's Fund says it will open 10 new Ebola community care centers this week in Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone's Bombale district, one of the areas hardest hit by the fatal disease. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Latest UN figures show Sierra Leone is approaching 5,600 Ebola cases, including nearly 1,200 deaths. Among the reasons for these numbers is the failure of people infected with Ebola to go to treatment centers, which often are far away from where they live. People who remain at home are at risk of infecting family members and surrounding communities. To try to remedy this, the UN Children's Fund is introducing community care centers, a concept developed by the World Health Organization. The agency is opening the first of 10 such centers in Bombale District in northern Sierra Leone, with plans to build around 30 more centers in neighboring districts in the coming weeks. UNICEF representative in Sierra Leone, Roland Monash, speaking from Freetown, says the focus of these centers is to isolate all Ebola cases, to avoid infecting others, and to provide infected people with safe care in the community. The centers will be run by the government of Sierra Leone through its district health management team, with the participation of local non-governmental organizations. Monash tells VOA the main health workers in these clinics are trained nurses who come from the communities themselves.
The family members are indeed allowed to see their loved ones which are affected from a protected and safe distance. We are setting them up in the communities because often people have to wait very long before they are moved out of their households to treatment centers far away. And while they're at home, they are being affecting others. Secondly, there are not enough beds in the other places as well, so the community care centers also provide additional beds for treatment as such.
Monash says UNICEF has worked closely with local authorities and traditional leaders to make sure these centers are accepted and become an integral part of the communities. He says a recent national survey regarding Ebola shows knowledge and awareness of the disease is exceptionally high in Sierra Leone.
Stigma and discrimination reduced significantly, but misconceptions, although also reduced, remain. For example, 36% of the population still believes that bathing in salt water prevents from Ebola. And only 64% in the community accepted alternative safe burials without touching and washing of dead bodies. But overall, a significant improvement in awareness and behavior.
Monash says concern is increasing about the large number of Ebola orphans and children who are being abandoned. He says families are afraid to touch them because they are suspected of having Ebola. He says UNICEF is setting up observational care centers in 8 most affected areas where the children will be taken. He says Ebola survivors who are immune from getting the disease will care for these children during the critical 21-day incubation period to determine whether they are infected. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Today's Monday, November 17th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14.5 minutes past the hour. Liberians are expected to cast ballots in a special senatorial election on December 16th. The race in Monserrato County, the seat of the Liberian government, is packed with some high-power candidates, including football legend and 2-time presidential candidate George Weah and one of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's sons, Robert Sirleaf. But 33-year-old and former youth leader Benjamin Sanvi says he is the real candidate of change. Sanvi said if elected, he will fight for what he calls bread and butter issues, as well as the establishment of an anti-corruption court to fast-track corruption cases.
Why senator for Monte Rado County? I believe that that county represents the heartbeat of our country. I believe that I bring to the table a breath of fresh air, new ideas, 21st century approach, not forgetting where we've come from in our history, but also understanding that about 70% of our country's population, close to about 80% of Monte Rado County's population, are young people. And I believe that the time has come for us to have a senator from that county that shares the dreams and aspirations of that generation, and also someone who is able to bridge the gap and work along, you know, with people who are from the much older generations, so that we can start to solve some of the problems that are confronting us as a county and as a nation as a whole.
You were national advisor on youth affairs during the government of former President Charles Taylor. Do you see this as a blessing or a curse?
Well, I've made it very clear that, you know, I don't regret my service to my country. I see it as something that has shaped me into the man that I am today. I'm a totally different person. I'm a father today. I'm a husband. And I consider myself a patriot, someone who deeply cares for his country. And for me, if I were asked again to serve, I would do it in a heartbeat, because I believe that service to country is the proudest gift that any citizen can give her country.
As you know, a Liberian soccer icon and the leader of the Congress for Democratic Change, George Oppong Weah, is running for the Senate for Monte Rado County. How do you see yourself squaring off against George Weah?
Ambassador Weah is someone who I know very well. I consider him a patriot. I consider him someone who deeply loves our country like I do. But he's just someone who I have fundamental political differences with when it comes to the representation of our county. I believe that this election will not be about George Weah. This election will not be about Benjamin Sanvi. This election will not be about any other potential candidate who might want to seek that seat or the other seats that will be up. I believe that this election, and as long as I'm a player, this election will be about the issues. It will be about the bread and butter issues. It will be about that old lady or that young guy or that young lady who is somewhere in a slum or a district or a city in Monte Rado County, who's trying to put food on their table or trying to get access to quality education. Those are the issues that I'm going to be talking about. Those are going to be the things that I'm going to be championing. I am going into this election with a mindset to win.
What would you do about corruption if you were elected senator of Monte Rado County?
It's a plague that is deeply hurting our country. I think what we now need to head into is the punishment side of things. And if I'm ever blessed and if I'm ever privileged to serve as senator, I think one of the things that I'm going to push for, and I'm going to rally colleagues and fellow senators if that opportunity is given to me, is to put for an anti-corruption court. I think if we have an anti-corruption court where people who are accused or are indicted for corruption can get a fast-track case or a fast-track trial implemented, I think that would deeply help in this fight. And now, mind you, this is not just a governmental problem. Corruption is a societal problem. So I'm also going to be a strong advocate about the changing of the mindset of our people.
That was Liberia senatorial candidate Benjamin Sanvi. He spoke with me during a recent visit to the United States. Tensions appear to have eased in the Central African Republic capital, Bangui, after several days of a standoff between former rebels and international peacekeepers. About 1,000 ex-rebels have been resisting attempts to move them from a military camp. Nick Long reports from the Central African Republic capital, Bangui.
About 1,000 former combatants from the ex-rebel Seleka coalition have been living at the so-called Camp Béal in Bangui since the start of the year, when most Seleka fighters were forced out of the city by rival armed groups and international peacekeepers. The authorities have been under pressure from the population to move the remaining ex-Seleka out of the city, where they would be less of a security risk. After 2 weeks of violence in the city last month, the government, backed by French and UN peacekeepers, repeated its demand that the ex-Seleka relocate, amid rumours that they might also be forcibly disarmed. The head of the UN police contingent in Bangui, Luis Carilho, tells VOA how the ex-Seleka reacted.
Dans les derniers jours, surtout hier, il y a eu un groupe de personnes que normalement.
In the past few days, and especially on Thursday, he says, people from Camp Béal succeeded in erecting barricades on some key streets in Bangui. Ex-Seleka members told local radio they rejected a government offer of about $25 each if they leave the camp. They also threatened to blow up an ammunition dump inside their camp, claiming they were ready for what they called martyrdom. Munitions experts reportedly said an explosion at the ammunition dump in Camp Bayol could have been deadly for anyone within 400 metres of its perimeter, as well as for those inside. The UN, French and other EU peacekeepers, together with national security forces, succeeded in containing the ex-Seleka, says Police Commissioner Carilho, and the standoff has been resolved for the moment.
Après des négociations entre des représentants du camp avec les autorités nationaux,
Carilho tells VOA that negotiations between the government and the ex-rebels led to agreement on some points, and by late Thursday they were starting to take down the barricades. Several observers, including an officer in the CAR army, told VOA the government paid off the ex-rebels to calm them down. However, a humanitarian source says the Camp Bayal issue is not yet resolved, and the next move may be for the government to tell the ex-Seleka where it wants them to relocate. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
Outside of Kampala, a rehabilitation center known as KWASU, or Comprehensive Rehabilitation Services for Uganda, is doing extraordinary work by bringing together doctors, volunteers, and donations from around the globe. They have established the first and only rehabilitation center for disabled children in the country.
KWASU, the focus is on abilities, not disabilities. On a lush grassy lawn outside of the main hospital, a mix of current and former patients take center stage, competing in a round of sports games and silly dances. The theme of the day being, let them play. For children with missing limbs, deformities, and trauma, this is a rare event. The purpose is to raise money for a new playground and sports field. They want to transform their old playground into an area that's friendly for all sorts of disabilities, whether it's missing limbs or limited movement. Life for the disabled in Uganda is difficult, but for children it can be devastating. Christine Tusime, the principal physiotherapist at KWASU, describes the challenges facing the disabled here.
That is like what stops them from playing like other kids, from socializing with other people. And usually when they try to socialize, they are then stigmatized or called names depending on their disability. Of course, from that they tend to get a low self-esteem, so they stop socializing, and then they have all that whole psychological issues or challenges that come out from not being able to interact with kids their age, not being able to play, and generally not being able to go to school. Even if the parents wanted to take them out for a social evening or something, to the theater, to the museum, it's very hard to do that because they can't access the structures that are there.
KWASU treats patients from all over Uganda and some surrounding areas, including South Sudan and the DRC. Inside the compound, there are surgical theaters, therapy rooms, dorms, and even a primary school. Therapies can last from a few days to a couple months. They also integrate support groups for parents and families who sometimes have trouble understanding the disability. The employees at KWASU take immense pride in what they do. Moses Dennis Kawisa is a prosthetics technologist. He grew up with a family member who had lost a leg, and it spurred an interest in prosthetic development. He says children, by far, are some of his favorite clients.
If you don't walk, then you end up walking. When you feel good.
Yeah.
Especially kids. That's why they don't take long when you feed them. 1-2 days they are young. But you know, it's really interesting to see one walking, you know, when someone comes in not walking, not able to walk, not able to do other things, then the smiles they give, you know, the happiness, you know, they get to do new things, you know, running and playing.
Yeah.
It just makes it day by day.
KWASU receives no funding from the government and relies primarily on the kindness of donors, most of which come from abroad. They supplement their income by providing pharmacy, x-ray, and laboratory services to the neighborhoods surrounding them. They are hoping that in the future, a self-sustaining practice will be possible. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
The situation in Zimbabwe's hospitals is said to be slowly getting back to normal following last Thursday's agreement between striking doctors and the government, allowing the health professionals to resume their duties. The doctors, all of whom work for government hospitals, were demanding higher salaries and better work risk allowances. Emmerson Perzara, president of the Bulawayo chapter of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, says the doctors are working extra hard to ensure that the situation in the hospitals returns to normal.
I can confirm our
central hospitals and also peripheral hospitals that doctors started reporting for duty yesterday evening. Actually, for today, we're making our tours in ZHD executives and are taking their stations and offering their services fully to the members of the public. So I can confirm all our members are taking their respective stations.
How was the situation in the hospitals?
The situation is, we had said earlier, it was a bad situation, so we are coming to try to cover up of the lost time and also to cover up in terms of service provision to the members of the public. So we are expecting that normalcy will be regained very soon, as our doctors are now back in offering their services in full to the members of the public. They are going to try to cover up for the times lost in terms of the operation catalyst and also outpatient department patients have been before. So normal bookings are being put in place so that we have the number.
That was Emma Sam Pazara, president of the Bulawayo chapter of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. He was speaking to reporter Jonga Kandimiri of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Marco Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Guinea trounced Togo 4-1 as Cameroon pipped the Democratic Republic of Congo 1-0 in 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers on Saturday. South Africa edged Sudan 2-1. Senegal pipped Egypt 1-0. Angola and Gabon drew 0-0, as did Botswana and Tunisia. Elsewhere, Zambia pipped Mozambique 1-0. Malawi beat Mali 2-0. Ivory Coast overpowered Sierra Leone 5-1. African champions Nigeria dismissed Republic of Congo 2-0. Burkina Faso pipped Lesotho 1-0. Cape Verde Islands beat Niger 3-1 as Uganda edged Ghana 1-0 and Algeria dismissed Ethiopia 3-1. Staying with the Nations Cup, the African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma commends the government of Equatorial Guinea for their strong show of African solidarity by stepping in to accept hosting the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations with less than 2 months to the event. Following a meeting with the Equatorial Guinea head of state Teodoro Obiang Nguema, the Confederation of African Football President Issa Hayatou announced in Malabo on Friday that Equatorial Guinea replaced Morocco as hosts of the 2015 Nations Cup. Morocco declined to stage the three-week event scheduled to kick off on the 17th of January, claiming they are preventing the spread of the Ebola virus disease to Morocco. Equatorial Guinea will stage the competition in the capital Malabo, Bata, Mongomo, and Ebebiyin. Turning to athletics, Kenyan Jacob Kendagor and Namibian Beata Naigambo were men's and women's winners at the Valencia Marathon in Spain on Sunday. Elsewhere, Morocco's Hafid Chani and Ethiopian Amani Gobena were crowned men's and women's winners at the Istanbul Marathon in Turkey, while Kenyan Phyllis Ongori was runner-up at the Yokohama Women's Marathon in Japan. Finally, Argentina, Kenya, and the United States of America make final bid presentations to stage the 2017 World Youth Athletics Championships at the IAAF headquarters in Monaco today, Monday. Kenya and the United States are also bidding to stage the 2019 World Junior Athletics Championships. The IAAF named the successful bids tomorrow, Tuesday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, November 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a very productive week. You want to listen to the latest African music? Dance to the best African beat from across the African continent? Then you don't have a problem. Just tune in to the African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays at exactly 0900 and 2000 Universal Time. African beat, the show that brings happiness into your homes, smiles on your faces. So join me, your host, David Vandy, Monday through Friday, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time on The Voice of America.
African beat is the best. It's number one. We love it.
We'll be right back.